Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome back to The Evolution of a Snake. I'm Zach.
And I'm Madeline.
And I'm Caroline Calloway.
Now, before we can get into all of that, there needs to be some context and a little bit of foregrounding, because I know that not everyone is super familiar with who Caroline Calloway is. She is a social media influencer, an Instagram personality, and a writer who is known for being very much online. She has become famous initially for her long-form Instagram narrative captions, which included a filter-free approach, giving her followers a look into her personal life, her thoughts, and her experiences. But her public persona has often been a mix of support and controversy, much like the HBIC, the snake that we're all here to discuss. The kind of biggest scandal in her career, I guess, at the very beginning of it, was this article called I Was Caroline Calloway, written by her friend Natalie Beach, who, it came to light, had been helping her ghostwrite these long-form narrative captions and had helped her secure a book deal. Now, the public fallout between Natalie and Caroline has been ongoing ever since, and it is a tale full of twists and turns that I surely cannot get into in this very brief introduction to Caroline. But Caroline kind of, you know, came into the public consciousness around a time when we were very focused on scammers. The title of her book is Scammer, by the way. Anna Delvey, Billy McFarland, Elizabeth Holm, these were all genuine con people who conned people out of stuff. Caroline ran a kind of messy creativity workshop tour that ended up getting canceled because she couldn't get it together to book any of the venues. And that was kind of lumped in with all of the other scams and Natalie Beach's personal essay, which in my view was a pretty spineless, one-sided account of something that was not that interesting to begin with, I suppose. That really painted her into a box of scammer, don't trust her, don't believe her, and it led Caroline down a very interesting and fraught path where one might say she kind of lost her mind a little bit. She really got too into the weeds. You know, she lived in New York, and a community of snarkers developed around her that chronicled her every downfall online and were just plotting on the not success of her career. It was kind of a lot to deal with. And most recently, she has bounced back and finally delivered on something that was kind of the main excuse used against liking her by everyone who had it out for her, which was that she couldn't get it together to write a book. She talked a lot about writing and being a memoirist and being better than Natalie. But when she found out that Natalie Beach, author of I Was Caroline Calloway, was coming out with a book, Caroline said, you know what? I gotta beat her to the punch. But before that, she had to pay back a $100,000 advance from the book deal that she secured with Natalie's help as a ghostwriter and failed to follow through on. After that, she still managed to self-publish her version of the event, which is called Scammer, and by all measures of success, with full disclosure, neither Madeline nor I have read it. We couldn't get a copy of it. It is sold out forever and ever on her website, and there is no ebook, but I've read snippets of it here and there and many of the reviews. By all measures, Caroline's book is far more interesting and much better than Natalie Beach's. And, you know, no matter what you want to say about this girly, she may be chaotic, she may be a little bit narcissistic, she may go around in circles, as you'll find in this interview, she does go around in circles a lot. She's talented. She has a talent, and she has a perspective, and she has something to say. And I think that's why we felt compelled, or I felt compelled, to reach out to her and see if she wanted to be on the pod. She is a noted Swiftie, according to her, and she put on her Instagram story months ago that she was looking for podcasts to go on, and I thought I'd shoot my shot. I'll let Madeline explain to you a little bit more about how that came to be.
I first encountered Caroline Calloway when the I Was Caroline Calloway article by Natalie Beach came out. And that was a moment where I was like, who the fuck is this person? I had never heard of her before. And it was one of those moments where I felt out of the loop because it was like everybody knew who she was except for me. So, of course, I had to sit. I had to read the article and figure out who she was. And I remember reading it and my reaction being kind of mixed. It wasn't as though I walked away from that article thinking to myself, wow, Caroline Calloway is the most evil person alive, and Natalie Beach is just her victim, and Natalie is so right, and Caroline was so wrong. I think even back then, I understood that it was probably a lot more nuanced than that. And, you know, plus, I've had my own falling outs with female friends, and I could write an article on what they did to me or how they treated me and put it in the cut if I wanted to. And they could do the exact same fucking thing to me. There's a lot of nuance in interpersonal relationships. So I kind of at that time just chose to be interested and intrigued and not really get caught up in wondering who was quote unquote right in that situation. I chose to see it as the court jesters entertaining me, frankly. Of course, then there was her book deal being a flop, and then Snake Oil, which put me through the fucking roof, and her writer's workshops, and et cetera, et cetera. And I would just like have these things happen, not really react to them very much or have much of an opinion. I took it all in with like a bit of a grain of salt, but my main opinion on her in general was that I just didn't get why people were so fascinated by the whole thing. Like, to the point where they're actually going out there and buying the snake oil. It's like, now why would you buy snake oil? It wasn't even so much like, I think she's a scammer. I just kind of thought, and maybe still think a little bit, that she kind of enjoyed having these big scandal type moments, because it kind of seems like all they ever do is serve her brand ultimately. And that's kind of the way that I think, even after meeting her, I still feel, which again isn't to say that I think it's either right nor wrong. I just kind of think that's what she's about. I found out that she was going to come on the podcast, or even that Zach had asked her anything at all, because this is really funny. I had heard that people were being invited to a secret fan event for the premiere of the Eras Tour movie, and I, just being a silly, goofy kind of a girl, just kind of a Swifty, went into the podcast DMs, and I was thinking to myself, like, oh, maybe we have a DM from Taylor Nation in there. Like, maybe I'm going to go to the Eras Tour premiere. But instead of any of that, instead of any Taylor Nation DM, and instead of me going to the Eras Tour, I got to see Caroline Calloway responding to, like, it was from June. So June, July, August, September, you know, 4 months, 4 months ago, Caroline Calloway is responding to a message in her DMs from 4 months ago that was from Zach. And the message was essentially like, we have like the best Taylor podcast ever, and maybe you want to come and be on it. Hee hee. I don't know. And then Caroline being like, her responding and saying, here's my phone number, text me. I read that and was like, what the fuck is this? Like, what the fuck? I guess I just have Caroline Calloway's phone number now? Like, okay. It's so funny because, like, in spite of all the mess and all the chaos, I actually thought it went pretty well. Like, all things considered, I thought she was amicable. I thought she was friendly. I thought she was engaging. I did think she was kind of circuitously stuck talking about Natalie, but that's a huge part of the book she's trying to sell. And, you know, this is the thing that she's, I guess, by going on podcasts, that you could argue this is kind of like a PR tour of sorts. So it's like, that's what she's trying to sell. That's the whole thing. Whatever. It really didn't bother me that bad. She was a little scattered. She was a little kooky. But I thought we had a generally good conversation, even if we literally didn't even ask her about 95% of the things that we wanted to ask her about. And you know what? All said and done, she loved my eyeshadow. And for that, I kind of have to just go ahead and stand.
And today we're doing Caroline Calloway-ology. We are talking to noted scammer, queen, book writer, chaos ensuer. We are talking to Caroline about everything Taylor related. Are you excited, Caroline?
I could not be more excited, because on my most recent like press tour for my book, I really feel like there haven't been enough opportunities to talk about Taylor Swift. And that's a problem that I feel like you guys can fix for me. And so I'm very, absolutely. I feel absolutely in good hands, and I'm very excited to right this wrong.
we definitely can assist you with this in-depth exploration of Taylor Swift via the Caroline Calloway perspective. But a little bit of context, if you want to know a little bit more about our podcast, we are the best Taylor Swift podcast, of course. That's duh.
Okay,
that's
I already knew that. I said, I should have said, tell me some context I don't already know.
Exactly. So we are known for being a little, shall we, how would you phrase it, Madeline? Critical, would you say?
I would call it lovingly critical. Lovingly critical. We are definitely not the sort of podcast that just thinks that everything that Taylor does is perfect and wonderful and amazing. We like to cook a little bit. We like a little bit of a cook.
We have notes. And,
yeah.
We have notes.
We have notes.
I have very few Taylor notes, but I am fascinated to hear what yours are.
Well, trust me, when we mine for your hot takes, they will appear. Why don't we start with what Taylor song do you think is really speaking to you right now in your soul, in this era of your life? Like what song is like you wake up and the lyrics are pasted on the back of your eyelids?
Yes. You know, it used to be Long Story Short because I felt like Long Story Short, it was a bad time, but I survived. But more recently, I've really been feeling Karma because I just – I don't know how much your listeners know about the Caroline Calloway lore, but a big thing that happened in my life was in 2019, my ex-best friend sold this like expose about me for $5,000 to The Cut. And she really tried to take credit for a bunch of my writing. She sort of positioned herself as like the mastermind behind my brand.
Scooter Braun.
Scooter Braun behavior.
Scooter Braun behavior, maybe even some Kanye behavior. It was very, I'm gonna let you finish. She did that. And for a while, everyone believed her. Like they just... They totally like bought her lies and showered her with praise and money, and I just felt really, it just made me really sad to see someone do like an objectively shitty thing, like sort of throwing their friend under the bus to advance their own career and have it like work. And so for a while it was definitely like Long Story Short, bad time, but I survived. But recently when our two books came out, hers
flopped.
Karma is a cat
purring in my lap like Matisse in a tiny hat. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And my book is
far superior.
You know what, you took the words right out of my mouth. And so I do feel very Karma's my boyfriend lately.
Yeah, totally. I feel like that you and Taylor have kind of similarities in that you're both very earnest, I would say, about like what you do, your art, and like being very upfront about enjoying it and being super into it. So I was wondering, like, what era of Taylor's do you really resonate with? Because in my mind, I feel like you are currently in a bit of a Midnights era, because you're like, for us, I think Midnights is like a hyper productive, very generative space, churning out a lot of different kinds of content, feeling very creative and driven from like a work perspective. Do you resonate with that?
Yes, totally. You know, Midnights is my favorite album of
hers. That's crazy.
And so I really connect to that. Absolutely. I feel like for a long time, I feel like my Reputation era lasted like 3 fucking years. Like, bless mm-hmm. Taylor yeah. that she was able to condense that to what feels like a much shorter time than I had. But yes, no, totally Midnight's era. 100%. And I'm also very much I know people have said that like Reputation is a love album and Midnights is a breakup album. I do feel very like alone here in Florida, which is very much the point of being here, of just being isolated, focused. I'm trying to put out 2 more books this year, which since the first book came out will be like 3 books in 6 months, which is wild, especially for someone who famously had made no books for so many years. That was like my whole thing. Extra big for me. But Zach, you literally have me just absolutely open book, have me completely pegged. You're like, this bitch needs a reminder text.
Clocked. For yes, I was like, Caroline needs to be jogged.
Would love to come. This bitch would love to come on our Taylor Swift podcast. Mm-hmm. This bitch is in her Midnight's era. Like, I honestly, I'm like, tell me more about myself, Zach, because I'm learning.
We're ready. Oh, we have copious notes ready and prepared for you. Let's go back to Reputation, because you're okay. Right. Your Reputation era did last a really long time. Madeline's Stan album is Reputation.
It is my favorite album. My number one favorite album.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Wait, but, what are your guys' favorite Taylor Swift songs?
Mine is Holy Ground. That's my number one.
My number one changes a lot.
That I didn't.
It's been like Cruel Summer for a while now, but I also love Wildest Dreams as well and Ready For It. Those are my like top three.
Noted.
Switch. Yeah.
Wow. Did you say Ready For It as the third?
Yes, Ready For It. I love that song. Underrated.
Wow, that is like...
Went number one in your household, that's for sure.
It went number one on my Billboard Hot 100, let me tell you.
That's incredible. Yeah, Ready For It is so good. Have you guys been to the Eras Tour?
Have we been to the Eras Tour?
Caroline.
Yes, we have.
Caroline.
Absolutely, we have.
We were robbed. We were literally robbed by StubHub for our tickets to go to the Eras Tour.
What city did you go to?
We went to Chicago, and we're not at liberty to discuss the ticket price. I'm not prepared to reveal that information.
You're like, I did make myself sign an NDA.
Literally.
We were there.
We spent too much. The floor. Yep. I had my hand in Madeline's face the whole show.
Yep. Arm in the air.
She was getting body slammed left, right, and
I was loving
center.
It. And I was loving it.
And we planned to go to the London shows next year. We wanted to ask you, though, what did you go to the Eras Tour? Oh, I don't remember seeing you there, but you went offline for a while.
Yes. So I didn't post my content from it, but I went 2 nights in Tampa when she came. And I plan on going to both of the Miami shows next year.
I love it.
Wow.
And maybe I really want to go to the Stockholm show for some reason. I just feel like I don't know. I want to do a Europe date as well. But I want to do some like obscure or more obscure like European city, not like Stockholm's like that like.
She's in Lyon in France. I feel like that's a little obscure. You could go there.
Yes, like one of those cities, like Lisbon or like not like a London, Paris, only because I don't know. I want to use it as like an excuse to like travel. But
that's what
like
we're doing.
A place that I like don't know as well. And but I spent so much money on my Tampa tickets. I was second row one night.
Wow.
I'll never own a home, but I have no regrets. It was incredible. And my best friend from England came both days, and she is like the biggest Taylor Swift fan. And it's so much fun to go to those events with someone who like is a huge fan. But the Eras Tour, I thought of it is because you know what song was so good at the Eras Tour? Ready For It.
Oh,
like,
yes.
Oh, my God. Oh,
That moment in the show is fucking
people
incredible.
Died.
When she comes out, stomp, stomp, stomp.
When the boots
click, get clack, put on.
Click, clack.
And I am ready for
and
it.
And the heels hit the floor.
Yep.
It's gag worthy.
It's gag worthy.
You're like, I am like, give it to me. Yep. I am so ready.
Feral. Mm-hmm.
Stomp on me.
Feral.
Stomp on my face.
Yeah. Also, I really lose it for that little like sapphic moment during the chorus where like she and all her dancers like line up in some sort of like
I love the choreography
all female mm-hmm. orgy. That is yeah. what really does it for me.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I am not well. Yeah. I'm not well when that part happens.
What were your surprise songs? What did you get for your
secret
editions?
Oh my gosh, I had such good surprise songs. One night we had The Great War with Aaron Dessner and yeah, You're on Your Own Kid. And the other night we had
that's a coup.
I know. And the other night we had Mean and Mad Woman, which I just felt were like so Caroline Calloway coded.
Very
like, yeah, some
yes.
people can be
yes.
mean, but I'm crazy.
It's so true.
That
people are mean
true.
To you and you are occasionally a mad woman.
I was like, Taylor, stop flirting with me.
We got I Wish You Would and The Lakes, which were good songs.
Those are good songs.
They are, but the next night we had Intergalactic Flops. Dare I say the worst?
The worst surprise song combo of like the entire tour.
You All Over Me.
Featuring Maren Morris.
Nobody knew the words.
Heard of it?
Maren Morris, who came and went without a sound, to my knowledge. I sat down.
He did. He sat down and filled the room with negative energy. I danced. I put my smile on and I danced, even though I didn't want it.
You said, I'm going to sing, I'm going to rock. And then we got, I Don't Want to Live Forever. And it was me doing the Zayn part and carrying the entire fucking stadium on my back.
Nobody else knew it, which is so funny because it used to be like such
no
a big hit,
words.
But nobody knew it. It was not
yeah,
the best.
Yeah, wasn't that like the theme song of like 50 Shades of yeah. Grey? Like the biggest
yes.
movie?
Yes, billion was, streams. For a long time, it was her only song on streaming.
Those don't sound like such bad flops, especially since, you know, she did have you there to carry.
Oh, exactly.
The Zayn part.
That's
if
very
Zach
true.
Wasn't there,
that's
it
true.
Would have been
I mean,
a lot
we
worse.
We rescued.
Yeah.
Yeah, what could have been Intergalactic. Flops.
So what would be your like ideal secret song? Like if she really was singing and speaking directly to you, what would be the combo that would really at this moment gag you into the next dimension?
Well, obviously Karma's on the set list and mm-hmm. Midnights is my favorite album. So much of Midnights is on the set list. Okay. And maybe, you know what, I guess Long Story Short, I'd put that one. I'd do Long Story Short and Invisible Strings just because I wish those were on the set list. But only if she's ready to sing Invisible Strings, because I know that she changed mm-hmm. it and like did the one instead. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that might be a really hard song for her to sing right now. So if Taylor is ready, I would love Invisible Strings and Long Story Short in Miami.
We don't care if she's ready. We want her to get her ass up and sing
get
and work.
Your ass up.
Deliver the content.
She played Cornelia Street. She played Cornelia Street in
like,
Mexico.
Tree, if yep. you're listening to this, I did not know this was a critical Taylor Swift podcast when I came on.
These are
on.
Not
I
my
it was
opinions.
Fangirling.
These are not
tree,
my opinions.
Do not lump me in with these people, Tree. Yeah, I do not co-sign this, Tree.
Well, part of the reason why we're so unafraid to be critical, I would say, is because we, you know, kind of went out the other side of wanting to get something from Taylor. I went to a secret session. Everybody cheered.
Everybody cheered. Everybody cheered.
Yep, yep. Madeline, I find a way to work that in wherever I can. And
I wish that you'd been like, and welcome back. I'm Zach. And I went to a secret session. And no one else is going to say their names in this intro because I have a fucking story to tell you.
It's true.
You what? You what? You went to a secret mm-hmm, session. Mm-hmm, which one? Which one?
Nashville Reputation, which was, I think, the superior album to go for a secret session for because we really truly knew nothing about it. Like with 1989, we kind of knew what the gist was. There were two songs out. People were rocking. With Lover, it was like that album was such a mess that, you know, anything was going to be good. But Reputation, we had no clue. And she had been very silent. She was like not present on social media, as we know, at that time, kind of like the way you're interacting with social media now. You don't follow anyone. Taylor was not following anyone. So it was interesting to see how she was going to like conduct herself. Your creativity workshops were kind of secret sessions. I suppose.
Yeah. You know, I planned them off of Secret Sessions in many ways, except I would say the difference is that
they were so secret they didn't happen.
Yeah. Well, no, they were actually so public and so ridiculed that they were canceled because I just no longer felt like I could like offer people the, it just like wasn't the right vibe at it was a terrible, big, fat, awful vibe because it's just like people felt silly for going to them. There were reporters and it was just like, I no longer felt like I could even remotely offer people the sort of like fun, intimate, like Saturday afternoon that like I originally wanted. But so you went to her Nashville house. Is that the house she bought for her parents? Like the big white
one? Yes, that's the one. We got the love story plaque on the wall. We got her mom and dad present and accounted for. We had Abigail, noted girl who gave everything she had to a boy who changed his mind. Her.
Yes, she famously so.
Yep, she showed us her ring to the man she was going to get divorced from shortly thereafter. When did you become a Taylor fan? When was your like induction into like really following along?
You know, this is so sad, but I came on with 1989.
That is not sad. That's more of a credential than you realize.
And I fully stayed for the Reputation era. Mm-hmm. Like I was not, although I did miss debut Fearless, Speak Now Red, I was so fucking riding for her during Reputation, which doesn't cancel that out, but it does, I feel like, count for something. It like does. I really was not a,
for sure.
Once I was in, I was not a fickle fan about it. Like I was, mm-hmm. I was there. I was ready to ride at dawn. But I have another question about the Secret Session. Were mm-hmm. you so absolutely dazzled by Taylor's fame? Or because it was during Reputation era, where like her reputation was at her lowest, were you able to maintain a better sense of self? Because I think that someday when I have many, many books out, I really think that I don't think Taylor and I will ever be best friends, but I know in my bones that someday we'll be on decent terms. But I just don't think that right now, because I have so little fame and accomplishment compared to hers, I just don't feel like I'd be able to like see her as a human and like hold it together around her. Like I just feel like I'd be dazzled by the stardom because I wouldn't have my own. Is that something that even registers in your brain, or is that just like my Caroline brain and you're like, I have no idea what you're talking about, bitch?
Interesting. That's an interesting question. I mean, now it would be different if we were to meet her, like if Madeline and I were to meet her again, there's a larger possibility that we would be on the radar, right? Because we make a lot of content about her. It's especially critical. It's known. There aren't that many Taylor podcasts in the space.
Yeah. I don't know if I would want her to listen.
She's
to
not
it, so.
Super accepting of that. We don't know how she would respond to that.
I have no idea. So I'm just rocking.
Yeah, it was good. I didn't feel that she was not a person. Also, the part of the Secret Sessions is that you're desensitized because you're there for so long. Like you're there for like 8 hours. By the time you actually get to meet her, you've been kind of sitting there and looking at her and you kind of go through all the like, oh my God, that's Taylor Swift. Oh my God, it's a famous person in front of me. What am I going to say to her? By the time you walk up to her to have your like personal conversation with her, you're kind of chilled out a little bit. Not the case for everybody. I saw many a person cry and I need my anxiety medicine, like people like that. There was a lot of that behavior, but
yeah. And those anxious girlies are very relatable to me. What are the other Taylor Swift podcasts? You said there weren't that many. I know Ellie Schnitt has one.
I don't know who that is,
right?
So maybe we actually are not kept abreast of who they are.
Well, I mean, it's like I know every other song. I know that one. I know there's like a bunch of Gaylor podcasts. I know that as well. But there's not really ones that do exactly mm-hmm. what we do, because we go through her career. We do a whole bunch of other stuff too, but we go through her career year by year. So it's more of like a biography, if you will, of Taylor's career. And we're only in 2017 at this point with doing the yearly episodes.
And we've been doing it for 4 years.
And we've been doing it for a long time. It takes a while. Listen, it takes a while to cook.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
We go day by day. Like day by day through day the career. Day. It's not just like, oh, in the Reputation era, we're like, okay, January 1st, she wore leather boots in LA and we loved.
Yep.
We cheered. Or she cut her hair and she had that fuck ass bob and she was terrorizing the citizens of New York. You know?
We
offer a specific, we offer a specific retrospective, I would say. And also because we're just, you know, mentally ill, terminally online fans and have been for so long. Our frame of reference is pretty.
We know
vast.
A lot of stuff. We know a lot of fucking stuff that, like, your average, like somebody like you, Caroline, who came in during 1989. It's like there's so much lore from like Red era and Speak Now era and Fearless era, even Debut, that like we know because we're mentally ill and terminally online. That nobody else knows about.
I have two more questions. What is your stance on Gaylor? Like, do you think? What do you think happened with Carly, Diana Agron? Like, what do you think?
I thought this might come up. Madeline, take it away.
Me? Going back to what I was saying before, like, because we've been fans for so long and we've been following her for so long, like, Zach became a fan, like, during early Fearless, and then I was a fan during Debut, so I've not to be, like, parasocial, but, like, I feel like I've known her for a while, known of her, at least I've been following her for so long that... To me, like, it was fun and it was cute and we were having a good time when people would surmise about Carly and Taylor. It's like, are they fucking? Are they not? We don't know. That was
fun. Fun question.
But to me, it's like, as somebody who's been here for so long, it's like, when people started thinking that she really was, like, a closeted lesbian, I was like, where are you guys getting that?
We lost the plot now.
Plot is lost.
Who said that?
To be even more clear, like, I don't like sapphic readings of her lyrics. I mean, how are you going to listen to Ivy and say that there's not sapphic undertones to that? Like, we have no problem with
seven.
She's a liar. She's a liar, and everything she does is a lie.
We don't like that. We don't like that. The bearding. That she's going to come out on this date.
It's the conspiracy theory shit.
They're so dangerous because, you know, like any conspiracy theory, it seems super reasonable. And then, like, when you get a little bit too into it, you start to realize the illness, the sickness of it all. And we're totally open. I think we've said this many times. We're open to the possibility of Taylor being bisexual. That's her journey. 100%. That's her right. It's very possible.
That's what I think.
The Gaylors insist that she's a lesbian. That's what really we have an issue with. Yeah. Because that's not true. That woman loves men. She does.
Let me tell you something.
No, totally.
Yeah, totally.
She loves men. She does. What's your stance on Gaylor, Caroline?
I think that she might be bi. I don't think she's a closeted lesbian. I agree, just like too crazy that she never loved Joe. Like, no, come on, guys. Pull it together. Like, but I really do think that she, as someone who has mainly, I'm bi, and I really feel like when you are a woman who is attractive to, like, the male gaze and also you're ambitious and desire power, I feel like, you know, it's just, it's such a easy kind of autopilot to just, like, and if you're attracted to men, like, if you're bi and, like, you really do find both genders attractive, like, it's just so easy to let yourself date men because, like, in the patriarchy, you don't even have to fucking do anything. The guys just, like, come to you, whereas, like, you really have to go out of your way and sort of, like, buck all these, like, sort of all the social conditioning that you've gotten as a girl to, like, pursue a queer identity. And then when you couple, like, I only obviously have experienced a sliver of Taylor's sort of scrutiny and spotlight. But, like, when I was at Cambridge, it definitely factored in. And when I was building my Instagram and writing my stories, like, it wasn't lost on me that, like, every rom-com ever about an American girl in England. She ends up with Hugh Grant. She doesn't end up with, like, another, like, show me the rom-com where she ends up with a British girl. And, like, if I wanted to make myself, like, mainstream marketable, like, those were the sort of experiences that I would need to make my art about in order to be, like, as mainstream marketable as possible. And I think especially in Taylor's, like, earlier career before she, you know, got very political, and where she was younger and listened to those pressures more, I could really have a lot of empathy for how she would just, it's not that she isn't attracted to men, it's just that she just sort of, it was so easy to go on autopilot and to just pursue those attractions and to let herself be chased and to just have really emotionally intense sapphic female friendships.
Well, it's kind of, it's, yeah, it's interesting that, like, you mentioned, like, oh, this is how I was writing my books and these were experiences I was having and this is, like, how I wanted to do my art. So in a way, it's like you felt compelled to only date men. And I think, like, if we're looking at Taylor, like, possibly being a bisexual woman, it's kind of the same thing. Like, she was somebody who was creating art about her experiences as well and her relationships. So she couldn't really be out there, like, especially in the early days, writing about women and dating women. So it's interesting to think about it that way. And the thing about being a bisexual woman also is, like, if you don't have, like, a girl-girl relationship, and if you are with a man, then you're not bisexual. It's kind of the way that people view it, which obviously is a bunch of bullshit.
Yes, and that's, and that's the way society views you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've never had, like, a real – I've hooked up with women, but, like, I've never had a relationship – I've never been in love with a woman in the same way that I've been in love with men. But, like, I don't think that, like – makes me not bisexual. Exactly. I think that just makes me, like, a product of a patriarchal society where – patriarchal heteronormative society where it's just, like, it's – I'm 31 and I'm only – and maybe it has something to do with how society has progressed as well and the conversations we're all having, like, collectively. But, like, I'm only just now, like, talking about these things and really – thinking to myself, like, okay, why don't I prioritize, like, dating women, even though it's so much harder? Like, let's do that. But another thing is that, like, you'll just never be as close to money and power and safety, or I would say you'll never be as statistically likely to be adjacent to money and power and safety in a queer relationship as a, or a, I would say a relationship with a woman. Gay men obviously wouldn't have this as much, but, like, women still make 69 cents on the dollar. Like, men are more likely to get promoted. When you walk down the street as two women holding hands, you're, like, you know, a porn category. But when you walk down the street holding a man's hand, no one will catcall you because you're, like, his property. Like, there are just a lot of little subtle things that, like, make being with a woman, like, that much more of intentional and sort of counterintuitive. Maybe that's the wrong adjective, but it just forces you to be more intentional about that choice to date a woman. And I just think, I don't know, maybe I'm just projecting my own experiences onto Taylor, but, like, I see what happened with, like, her and Carly Kloss and how they were so close for a bit. And then Carly, you know, went with Scooter and allegedly told Scooter about the Masters or didn't tell Taylor that Scooter was going to do that. And I really see a lot of, like, Natalie in that. Like, I really, like, definitely loved her and I think she loved me. And I think something about that unexpressed and, like, latent affection actually ended up, like, poisoning the friendship by making us, like, strangely out for only ourselves when it came to our professional lives.
When there is even, like, a grain of, like, romantic interest, like, in a female relationship when you're bisexual, it changes the entire dynamic and it completely fucks it.
Yeah.
It's many such cases. Many such cases.
You know, Natalie's never said that publicly that she was in love with me in the way that I've publicly written about the way that I truly like loved her and was afraid of that love. But since she's now married to a man, much like Karlie Kloss, but she has come out now as bisexual. So I
thought that to me, it always seemed, I thought Natalie was a lesbian. That was my impression when I first like read the story. That was just kind of the vibe that I had. I thought that.
I didn't know this. I thought
the way that she wrote about you was so, it was so much for a friendship. And it's like, I understand that we have like intense and deep friendships that really move us and like shake the foundations of our being. But I feel like the way she was writing, it was the way that she wrote that I was Caroline Calloway piece in the cut. If you're not familiar with it, check it out. I mean, well, actually read Scammer first and then check it out. But yeah. the way that it was written was so, it really felt like a score settling situation. It felt like a jilted or like a vengeful lover. So I was wondering, I mean, Natalie and Karlie Kloss, I suppose, if we're going along that direction, have something in common, which is that they were both the crook who got caught. That's how Taylor, you know, described her situation with Karlie, however that broke down. So I wanted to ask you, like, when did you start to realize that there was something more than just friendship in your dynamic with Natalie? And how did you kind of come to terms with that? Did moving away from New York and going to Florida kind of like jog that process along? What was that like for you?
You know, it's so funny. Madeline, did you say that you're bi, or did I just like totally hallucinate that?
I didn't say it, but I am. You just read correctly. Yeah. You just read right into it. And you're right.
The situation clocked. Correctly.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. Okay. I just didn't want to make any assumptions, and I felt like you had said it, but then I couldn't remember it exactly. And I just felt, I just thought it would be better to ask. But I don't know if you relate to this, but for so long, being bi, like, I don't know how old you guys are, but being 31, like, I can still remember, like, seeing the episode of Sex and the City where, like, all four of the girls, like, make fun of a bi guy and just say, like, well, he's gay. Like, it was really cool to just, like, make fun of bi people. And, like, I remember Tila Tequila's show on MTV where, like,
seminal.
Where it was, like, seminal. It was seminal. Seminal and groundbreaking.
Yes.
And she is, like, I applaud her for doing it. But at the same time, there are so many things. Since it was the first show of its kind, like, they were definitely eroticizing the female-female relationships, whereas they were seeing, like, the men as much more, like, long-term partners. And also just – and at the same time, sort of, like, making fun of the fact that she was dating both genders is, like, sort of, like, a – crazy. Well, they were like, almost like pathologizing it.
Like, she's a whore. She's just obsessed with sex. Yeah.
Freakish about this lady totally. That she would date her gender.
She's greedy.
It's greedy. It's indecisive. It's an illness. Like, that was it was giving that sort of energy. And so growing up with that, for so many years, I just like, it was just, even though I consider myself very ambitious and power and money and safety hungry, I'm also incredibly lazy. And I just felt
relatable.
Like it was so much work to just like rejigger my entire internal concept of self to align with this bi identity that was like much maligned throughout the culture. And I just like didn't want to have to summon the self-confidence in order to love myself with all of my early 20s insecurities about body and dating boys. And like, then I have to add into it that like, I'm this thing that like the culture hasn't really accepted yet. And I was like, you know what? I'm not even going to fucking deal with that. Like, I can just be straight for it. Like, I don't need to, it wasn't
yeah,
like,
that's the least of my concerns.
I literally was like, you know what? Like, I just don't even think about it. Just la 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 la. Like, keep going. Like, you know what? Oh my God. Like, think about it tomorrow. Like, you have a date tonight. Like, I really just sort of put off that sort of level of self exploration and self knowledge because it just felt really heavy and I just didn't want to dig into it. And so when I was friends with Natalie, there was no, I knew I loved her. I know I said I love, I was aware, I clocked the fact that I was saying I love you to her more as much, if not more, than my boyfriend at the time. Like, I knew that we did things like hold hands or link arms or, like, brush each other's hair back from our necks or little things like that. Or, like, I would try to do her hair because she would – or do her makeup because she said she didn't know how. Like, those sort of little ways that girl – that girl, no, no.
Jesus Christ. No, those little... Fuck's sake.
But I really only looking back, like, really see some moments where, like, my attraction to her was undeniable. And I feel like hers to mine, like, for example, when we were traveling in Italy one time, I speak Italian and Natalie doesn't. And I remember so clearly our, like, the guy at the hotel that we were staying at, or it was like sort of like an like a little B&B, when we got there to this like remote Sicilian island, he was like, okay, you know, the room with the two twin beds that you booked isn't ready, and won't be ready for another hour, but you could have a little cocktail out here on the terrace and wait for your room. Or we have a room with a double bed that's ready now. And I knew Natalie couldn't understand any of this conversation. And I just flat out, to the man in Italian, I was like, oh, we'll take the double bed. Like, we'll go to the room now. And to Natalie, I was like, they messed up our room order. Like, we have to share a double bed. Like, that's crazy that I was doing that. Like, that's like, and at the same, but it's just so complex because at the same time, like, what did I really want to happen? Like, I had a boyfriend at the time. I actually remember then being terrified of, like, even our, like, feet brushing in the bed or something like that, or terrified that she would do something. So it was just very complex to be gay as hell and just in total denial, you know, like just be totally into this girl and just like just not letting yourself have any awareness of it at all, just totally keeping yourself at be like, I wonder why I did that. Well, let's not think about it. La la la. Like, it's just absolutely batshit way to
very relatable. Behave.
I don't endorse it.
Yep.
I'm telling you what happened, not what you should do. I am all for the self-awareness. And definitely in this culture, I really hope for the bi babies of today that they won't feel as much shame or like self-loathing embracing that part of their feelings. So I'm very hopeful about it. But that is what I did in the year 2000. 11 and 2012. Do I have regrets? Many.
What was the power dynamic like between the two of you? Because it seems to me, like, I guess from the article that she wrote, it seemed very much that, like, you were the one that had all the power. You gave her the apartment. You were, like, paying her, etc. But it seems that, like, in hindsight, maybe you've reflected a little bit, Natalie had a lot of power in your relationship with her because you were in love with her. Do you feel like that now?
Absolutely. And, you know, Natalie taught me something once when we were writing together, which was when we worked on the book proposal together, which is what she really, in order to, like, sort of present herself as the author of my Instagram captions, she focused on these two periods of 3 months over about a span of, like, 3 years. And the first 3 months, we wrote captions for my Instagram, but no one read them. I had 40,000 bots, and we just wrote these, like, one-liner jokes. This was before I'd come up with the concept on my own of long-form narrative captions. And we just sort of wrote these, like, very short jokes for an audience of no one. And then years pass. I moved to England. I start doing my Cambridge thing alone. I finally get real fans, hundreds of thousands of them. And I also get addicted to Adderall. And when I hire her again, we write the book proposal. And while we were, which is like an internal document that only publishers see, it's not like a public facing thing. So I was still manning the brand alone without her. And when we were working on this proposal on Instagram, aspirational content performs really well. And Natalie said to me, I remember this so clearly. She said, people hate the rich in long form prose. Make yourself the plucky underdog. And like, it was very strange to see Natalie utilize the same writing devices, not just utilize, but like weaponize the same literary devices that she had once taught me against me to tear me down. And like, she not only had more power than she described in that article, in the sense that I was madly and complicatedly in love with her, but like, she was very like, she's like a writing nepo baby. Like, her aunt was at the time the editor-in-chief of O Magazine. Yep. Like, she got Natalie her first job, like, reviewing books for the magazine. Her parents are both writers. She has much more intergenerational wealth than I do. Like, she, even though my dad did go to Harvard, he was so mentally ill that he never really, like, got the income from that degree that many people with a Harvard diploma do. And, like, Natalie lived in this giant Victorian, like, beautiful mansion in New Haven, and she made fun of me in her article for being like really status obsessed and like into the Ivies, and sort of made herself out as like being so removed from that. But like, her little sister went to Brown, like her mom works for Yale, like she was very much there are so many power imbalance, and she was so charismatic and like lovely.
Well, that does not come across in the writing.
No.
Charismatic and lovely.
For what it's worth, she was voted the captain of the varsity NYU women's soccer team. So she had like sort of like an Abby Wambach kind of charm. Like, she was fit and had good leadership skills. And when she wanted to really like stir people up and like rouse them, she had that ability. And yeah, so there were just a lot of power dynamics that she didn't talk about that were very much at play in real life, but invisible, not just invisible, but like purposefully hidden in her piece.
Yeah. Because I
remember. Have you guys ever had any big friend betrayals?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Not like this, though.
No, but not, I mean, like, I won't put anyone on blast because nobody ever wrote an article about me in The Cut. So it's like, whatever. But yeah, no, I had like a really intense falling out, sort of similar to like how intense it was with you and Natalie, with like my high school best friend who I was friends with like through college. And it was horrible. It was like one of the most emotionally traumatic things that's ever happened to me because we were so close. And like, there might have been, I went to Catholic high school, so the bisexuality thing was like really repressed. And that's when we were becoming very close friends. So yeah,
oh my God.
That was horrible. It's like still to this day, I think about it and I'm like, that was bad. It was like a break, like a little breakup. I was having a hard time getting out of bed in the morning. Like, that's how bad it was.
Yeah. No, yeah. That's.
Yeah.
You're not alone at all in that. Like, the Natalie thing was so, I felt that betrayal like in my bones. Like, I really, like, I've never had any male partner cheat on me, but I can't imagine that I would be more upset than Natalie's article in The Cut. Like, maybe I could fathom that I'd be as upset, but like, I certainly would not be more. Like, it's just so,
it was just so, so dark-sided the way yeah, that she, like, I really guess dark-sided. Used that plucky underdog thing that you mentioned. And it's interesting because you've both you and Natalie have utilized that plucky underdog stature to like succeed or to be presenting in public in a certain way. You know who else does that a lot? Taylor Swift.
She does.
Loves to be the plucky underdog, but it gets to a point where you can't plausibly take on the underdog persona anymore. Like, Taylor Swift is Taylor Swift. There's no longer any facade that like she has it harder than other people or that she's less successful than others because of XYZ reason. So I was wondering, have you found that as your like following has grown, as you've gained more fame, you talked a little bit about what it was like to become famous, did you start to chafe? Was there like a bit of an identity disconnect with that like underdog feeling versus the success that you were seeing playing out in real life?
Oh yeah. I mean, but it's, I'm just like a messier, more flawed complicated person than Taylor Swift.
Essentially, at this point, what had happened was Caroline flicked off her computer screen to Google something while she was talking to us, and her video and sound disconnected on the recording. We could still hear her in real time, but it did not get recorded, unfortunately, which is a shame because we had a pretty fun lightning round of Taylor Swift questions for her. And I'm going to answer what I can remember to the best of my ability. She also told us that she had to log off very shortly after this because she needed to get a new passport, because when she moved to Florida, she threw her passport into the ocean so that she wouldn't feel the need to travel and would get comfortable where she was. To which I said, couldn't you just put it in a safe, girly? And she did not reply. But I asked her a lightning round of Taylor Swift questions. We wondered what her favorite era was, which the answer is Midnights, as we know. Her favorite hair era is also the Midnights era. She likes the long, wispy hair. And she thinks that her best main character moment is the Eras Tour, which is actually such a valid opinion to have. The era that she feels aesthetically attached to outside of Midnights is 1989, which also makes sense because she is a New York girly, noted, been new that she was that. And she, when asked what we thought about Travis Kelce, we said that we were into it, we liked it. She didn't seem too happy about that. She was not too on the juice head gorilla train, but we asked her to fuck, marry, kill Travis, Maddie Healy, and Joe Alwyn, and she said that she would kill Travis, she would fuck Maddie, and she would marry Joe. And the parting words, I have them listed here on the transcript, are, oh, that's psychotic, Caroline, but you know what? God bless you on your passport journey.